And we are back with an all-new episode of Keep It. I am soon-to-be-published author Ira Madison III.
That should have given a chill to everybody in the audience. That people, just like you, can put words on pages, and then we staple them, and then they're sold. It's sad. It's scary. I'm Louis Vertel. Yes, you are writing a book, and it is coming out. And actually, we're commemorating this with a strange live occasion. Is that not true?
Yes, we are. Last year, in the ye olde days of 2024, I announced my book tour for my book, Pure Innocent Fun, and the Boston date on February 7th is going to be a live Keep It at WBUR City Space in Boston.
That means you and I will be speaking there live. Keep It as a live experience. I mean, it's not really like, you know, Coachella. I don't know really why you would seek it out. But yeah, I will be there. You will be there. My brother used to live in Boston for years. And I said to myself, maybe I'll visit you sometime. And guess what? I didn't. He moved to Copenhagen to get actually even further from me. And now is my chance to get back to Boston. I'm actually really, really looking forward to it.
Ben Affleck is going to join us.
Oh, good. There was such a lovely Ben Affleck joke in the Golden Globes this week, which we'll get into. Actually, our entire episode is about the Golden Globes. And can I just say, every time we come back from this long break, the first thing we do when we come back is talk about the Golden Globes. In fact, I believe our first episode of Keep It was talking about the Golden Globes. Like, we started in January. And it is so the best way to start off a year, because it is just some bullshit. It is truly a room full of people standing around receiving awards, and then as they receive it, it dawns on them, why am I receiving this and who voted on it? Because I believe it's 11 Eurovision finalists. Who else is voting on this?
If you want tickets to our live show, you can go to our Instagram account at Keep It Show. There'll be a link there. You can also visit iramadison.com for my other tour dates.
Did you just say that salaciously? Oh my God.
You know, logging on like Sandra Bullock in The Net.
Yeah, it's the vibe was giving, and there's a guest book.
Wow.
Remember that?
Guest books?
Remember GeoCities? I spent a lot of time on there. And I was like, you need to come to my website where I've ranked my 100 favorite songs for nobody. Why would I do that?
Where was Amy Mann on that list?
You think she didn't have 9 to 11 entries? So you would think I spent my break productively, and maybe I did in some ways. I caught up with certain movies, but I mostly ended up on YouTube watching I Love the 80s, which is a topic that comes up a lot on this podcast and how you and I should restart it and not include any of our friends. It's just us making the comments and that's it. But do you know what people do not say about I Love the 80s? And this also includes I Love the 80s Strikes Back, I believe. I actually don't know what edition I'm talking about specifically. Beyonce is on it. And so you'll be watching like, you know, Rachel Harris and Michael Ian Black and Hal Sparks give their commentary on Rubik's Cubes or whatever. And then out of nowhere, Beyonce will just be there giving an interview about whatever, Lisa Turtle and Saved by the Bell. It's so jarring because we never get interviews with her. So it's like, oh, amusing writer comment. Oh, lost Dead Sea Scroll. Like what? It's so crazy to see her just be there talking freely.
Back when VH1 could actually get people into the studio.
Yeah, I believe they had a studio is what was going on there. Yes.
What's going on with VH1 these days?
I don't know. Are there still wives of basketball?
The merry wives of basketball.
You would think they would just churn out stuff like that all the time because it's got to be so cheap. Like these writers come in, they do like an hour of spiel, and then they, you know, walk on out. It's like that show After Midnight that's on. It's just the comedians for the night on After Midnight will just be three of my friends, like just people who are around.
Yeah, I feel like we need that again, if only because TikTok is not reputable. Where are people getting their information these days?
I hate finding this stuff on TikTok. It's just not the same thing at all. People are way too self-aware, too. Like they think they're too cute talking about this stuff.
I also have questions about TikTok. I mean, I love TikTok. I'm always on it. But there are always people doing videos in their car. And I'm just wondering if, one, people actually like feel like an impromptu need to give, you know, a speech while they're in their car.
Yeah.
Or if people just go specifically into their car to, you know, record a TikTok.
That's because, their speech like,
that's
zone.
Like, yeah. That's where you do it now. Well, yeah, is it because people just do that now? Is it like a general setting? Or is it, for some people, the only quiet place to record?
Right. Oh, that could be. That could be. Either way, I'm not sensing authority on behalf of these people, and they probably shouldn't be monologuing at us. But anyway.
You know, if TikTok was around in the 90s, Jewel would have killed.
And why is that?
Recording from her car.
Oh, that's true. Well, it was a van, first of all. Second of all, there would be plenty of room. She could do multiple installments of different parts of the van.
My last comment about vans, because over the break, I was watching the Challenge 40.
How old can I feel that there are 40 challenges? how challenged can we be?
This was Battle of the Eras. So they brought back people from Era 1.
Oh, God.
They brought people from...
So like, that, like, a Diplodocus is just out there? What? Yeah, like...
Like, you had, like, Tina, Rachel, Mark, Derek
Jesus
competing.
Christ.
I want to give a shout-out to Rachel, who came back after not being on the show in years and is just fucking dominating and is in the finals. The second part of the finals, I believe, airs this week. And also Derek, who, you know, hadn't been on the show in like 16 years.
Wait, is Derek Blonde this, the...
No, he's like this maybe Latino gay guy.
Oh, I remember him. Yes, yes, yes.
Yes, yes. He was on. Ryan was also on, another gay who was on the show. He made it pretty far, but got cut just before the finals. But Derek is in the finals and just honestly emerged as this amazing dark horse in the game and competing against people like Corey, Johnny Bananas, Jordan, and Kylan, who's doing great on the challenge now after being on Big Brother. So I think it's just great. This season feels like it's for the girls and the gays.
I just cannot believe you said the words Johnny Bananas to me. I mean, it's like, when does he get a Kennedy Center honors? It's been like 100 years.
I love that man. And CT went out early this season and Johnny Bananas is in the finals. And I feel like that is the sort of the karmic retribution, or, you know, just the payoff for CT making it so far in Traitors.
Right.
And Johnny Bananas cruelly being cut in the first episode of his season.
That's also like the weird thing about Traitors is it's basically random who loses and who wins. Like, it's not really skill ultimately. So I can't say I support the game of it, even though it is a very entertaining show. And UK season 3 just started. I hear it's great.
It is. I watched the first 3 episodes.
I will be on that momentarily. And then we're about to get US season 3 also, mm-hmm. which means we get more Alan Cumming, you know, in his gear screaming at us.
I want to say that it is sort of random who wins and who loses. And I feel like, when you try to amass a way to win Traitors, it's so difficult because you have to, one, be a big enough personality so that people think you're a traitor.
Yes.
But you also can't have enough people thinking you're a traitor because otherwise you'll get banished. You can't be a person who makes it seem like you'll never get banished because everyone loves you and thinks you're faithful, because then the traitors will murder you.
Right. No, the skill set is extremely nebulous, and I don't know if it's even admirable. Like, if you win the show, I'm like, did you do it? Like, good job? I don't know.
So really, it's just about the drama that's created while watching the show.
Right.
It's just chaos.
We've now given Trishelle prize money. I mean, it's a strange place. It's a strange place.
Don't remind me of that. I'm so glad she wasn't on the Challenge 40.
What's happening on today's episode? I seem to notice we have one of the great actors.
We have one of the great fucking actors. We have Marianne Jean-Baptiste with us this week.
Excuse me. I was there in 1996 when she was up for Secrets and Lies, and Juliette Binoche, whom we also love, keep it guessed, won that Oscar. Marianne was up for Secrets and Lies. She is back with Mike Lee, another Mike Lee movie called Hard Truths, which I feel like is floating under the radar in terms of audience reception, but critics are obsessed with it and her performance in it. This woman is unbelievable in this movie. Ira and I both like it, love it. And I'm so psyched she's here. This woman is so rad.
Yeah, we're going to talk to her, and we're also going to talk about the Golden Globes the entire episode because there's a lot to get into.
All I want to do when I come back from break is to talk about a fucking award show. Thank you. It's like, I mean, let's be candid. It's like I'm rolling. So.
All right. When we're back, the Golden Globes. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. What do you want your 2025 story to be, Lewis?
Oh, God. Well, I think it's just going to be one award show after another for me. That's really how I mark a year. If I were to write the song from Rent, Seasons of Love, it would be just about award shows right after another. Culminating, of course, in an amazing American Music Awards. How about you?
You know, I'm picturing a very good 2025. I just met a lovely man, and he's taking me to his home in Mandalay.
Oh, good luck.
Yeah, I hear he has a lovely maid.
Okay. Every January brings you 365 blank pages waiting to be filled. In 2025, maybe you're ready for a plot twist, or maybe there's a part of your story you've been wanting to revise. Life isn't about resolutions that fade by February. It's about picking up the pen and becoming the author of your own life. Think of therapy as your editorial partner, helping you write new chapters and create the meaningful story you deserve to live.
I definitely should have used therapy to write my book. Should have just recorded everything and just sent it to my editor.
I could have told you that in the first place. Why didn't you come to me? Therapy helps you identify problems you didn't even know you have. The gift of articulation, something Maya Angelou would appreciate.
And they might be problems that your friends have constantly told you that you have, but you know what? Listening to someone else kind of makes it click.
Oh, speaking from personal experience?
Maybe so.
Moving on.
BetterHelp is fully online, making therapy affordable and convenient, and serving over 5 million people worldwide. Access a diverse network of more than 30,000 credentialed therapists with a wide range of specialties, and you can easily switch therapists anytime at no extra cost.
Write your story with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/keepit to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/keepit.
For a limited time, you can get a Big Mac meal for just $8. That's a burger, fries, and a drink. They don't call it an extra value meal for nothing. Get a Big Mac meal only at McDonald's.
Price and participation may vary. Promotion pricing may be lower than meal pricing.
The 82nd Golden Globes premiered on Sunday, giving us a glimpse into the minds of Oscar voters. Or at least, that's what they say to keep us watching. Amelia Perez, Shogun, and Nikki Glaser won big, while Anora and whoever was running the teleprompter fell short.
Right.
But there's much, much more to discuss, so let's get into it.
Well, we should begin with Nikki Glaser, who I think everybody would agree is exactly
bodied
the right fit. Yeah, exactly the right fit for this ceremony. Like, just the right amount of irreverence, and yet you also knew that she would care about knowing the movies and not being better than, like, any of the movies. And, like, the whole vibe with Joe Coy last year was, one, that he didn't prepare at all, and two, hadn't seen any movies. Just not 1% did he belong in that stage, in that room. And with Nikki Glaser, you got the sense that she had a sensibility about all the movies, all the stars in the room. And if anything, if I could complain about anything, I almost wish she went a little harder. But I think maybe she didn't want to sound like Joe Coy. She didn't want to sound so dismissive that she was relying on kind of a shtick of condescension in order to sell her jokes.
Yeah, I feel like the only Joe Coy-esque thing was her joke about Dune, where she told Zendaya, "You were great. I woke up for all of your scenes."
Great joke, though. Yes, love it. Definitely drag Dune. Yes.
Yeah. It works because it plays on the fact that everyone talked about how long that movie was.
Yeah, right. I guess the thing that kind of sucks when it comes to hosting an award show is the monologues themselves have gotten so short that you basically can only hit a few talking points that are required. Like, you're going to hit, you know, oh, the biggest stars in the room. You're going to make a joke about the difference between TV stars and movie stars. So in a way, it felt like she had to kind of, go through the motions before she could say anything individual or really spicy that would make the monologue stand out. But you know what else is fucking bizarre? She is the first ever female solo host of the Golden Globes.
Yeah, Tina and Amy, you know, and then the time they had the number two ladies detective agency host.
Yes, and Ricky Gervais host like seven times. Man, talk about something I do not miss. Woof. Do not bring me back to those times. No, I think almost inevitably Nikki Glaser will be back for more, especially since there aren't too many names that come to mind when it comes to who should be hosting these things. I don't know. It's like we're filtering out of comedians whose whole thing is knowing about celebrity. You know, like yeah. That feels like a very Joan Rivers era kind of take on popular culture. And believe me, I fucking miss it. Like, that's who I am. That's who you are. So,
yeah, I mean, that and the whole era of Kathy Griffin doing stand up yeah. And everything, you know, it was we really had comedians who commented on celebrity, commented on pop culture. That's why we had I Love the Fucking 80s, you know, and Nikki Glaser would be front and center in an I Love the 80s or I Love the 90s if it were airing right now.
Which, by the way, also calls to mind, you would think Kathy Griffin would have hosted one of these award shows by now. I mean, I understand she goes through it with like public perceptions and stuff, but like not one Golden Globe, she's exactly right for it.
Yeah. Speaking of spicy, though, what'd you think of the Diddy joke?
Well, first of all, again, another thing where you knew you were getting a Diddy joke. Like, that was the celebrity story of the year. You knew something was going to happen with oil. And I have to say, once she said the word Stanley Tucci, I was like, here comes something with virgin, extra virgin olive oil. I know it. I liked it. I liked it. What'd you think?
The Tucci part made it funny for me.
Yeah. Oh, you thought it was a bit crass?
I don't think it was crass. I think it was just, it's a weird joke to make, if only because no one in the room is technically a victim of Diddy's.
Right.
You know, the way like with Harvey Weinstein.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a Hollywood scandal, but the victims are all, you know, poor people who were like trafficked.
Yes. It was in the style of her kind of roast comedy where it's like, you recoil for a second before you laugh.
Yeah. But no, I fucking loved her. I thought she was fantastic. And honestly, the one bit that I really loved too and wanted more of when she was doing the Popular joke, the
just
mashup
do the
of
whole
Conclave
song.
And Wicked, do the whole song.
Yeah.
I wanted it.
She started doing this thing where she put on a Pope hat and sang Popular in the style of Wicked. And then she cut it short and was on a phone with somebody who was telling her, wait, this bit sucks, which is also a funny way to end a bit. But at the same time, when she was about to actually sing a song, it's like, man, we really don't get that at award shows anymore. I thought we were about to get a soupçon of, you know, the old Billy Crystal magic. Now, I'm not saying if you watch those Billy Crystal musical Oscars, you're going to be in love with them. I watched some of those and the jokes are, you know, deeply dated. But at the same time, you like the risk taking of somebody like that. You know, go out there and sing and then truly, like with the widest emoji grin, ask people to love you. And maybe they don't. You know, I think that's fun.
I like it when someone sings at an award show with Ariana DeBandon. You know?
Ariana DeBandon. What? We need to get you away from the OED. That is not going in.
It's my fifth day of Prozac, Lewis. I'm everywhere today.
Speaking of Ariana's, though, Ariana Grande, who, of course, has been an Oscars favorite for Wicked, lost to Zoe Saldana for Emilia Perez. Now, I am not one of these hardliners about category fraud. It just doesn't, generally speaking, that mean that much to me.
This is a scam.
Zoe is the lead of that movie. She is undoubtedly the biggest part in that movie. And she is amazing in it. And from the jump, I feel like every line she delivers in that movie is fantastic. But I do have to say, I guess Emilia Perez could still go all the way, like be a Best Picture candidate or winner potentially. This may top Green Book as like the most hated Best Picture winner of the past 15 years or something. And I'm a fan of it. I know you don't like it, but it's weird that it still has legs given that it is very polarizing all of the time.
You know what? This is less Green Book for me and more giving La La Land.
Oh, okay.
Because I feel like there's people who aggressively dislike it. And then there's also people who love it.
Right. And it's also like a musical, but at the same time, not really the classic musical you expect. Like, as I said when we were fighting about it, the musical moments in this are kind of just like monologues set to music. And in La La Land, obviously, there are one or two big musical moments, but it is this kind of drowsy in-between dialogue and musical movie.
And Zoe's rapping, but it ain't Miranda. let's just say that. I have actually eased up on, you know, hating the movie. I don't hate it. I think it is silly.
It is a very silly movie. Yes.
I think when you remember that a French man directed this Almodovar for Brain Injuries film, that it makes a lot more sense.
Yeah.
I compared it to The Skin I Live In, which is also a psychotic film, but it has more finesse and class. And this is just sort of just like colors outside the lines and is a little messy, like a little sloppy. That's what I feel about the movie ultimately. But, you know, I don't hate the fact that there's a queer film with a trans actor at the center getting all of this acclaim. You know, I think that Jeremy O'Harris brought this up on Instagram and Billy Eichner shared it, just about the fact that when a queer film comes out or like a black film, et cetera, you know, it's always like black or queer media who sort of like attacks it. This was coming from the fact that a review from them, which sort of slammed Amelia Perez and said that it's horrible and we need to talk about it. And, you know, I think that I can appreciate what the movie's doing. You know, I think we maybe have to come to a point critically where we discuss the merits of a film if it's a film that is a part of our community. You know, and I hate that, but I think we're just at such a point in the industry now where they're barely making any fucking thing post COVID and strike, you know? So like, if we're getting something, we should not try and drag it to hell.
Well, also something I want to rail against is that this movie is like people on Twitter, et cetera, take scenes from it and then just post it and be like, well, this is trash. And it's like, guys, yeah, the musical scene where they say the words like penis and vagina is meant to be jarring. Also, it's like, that's also not what the entire movie is like. Like, for the most part, it's this violent thriller, and then it sidesteps that and becomes this weirdo musical for a second. So it's supposed to be uncomfortable, and it's supposed to be strange. Another situation like that in past years involving Oscars movies that people got up in arms about. Do you remember that movie, The Good Nurse, with Jessica Chastain and Eddie Redmayne? And people posted, yes, a scene with Eddie Redmayne freaking out in it. And they're like, this is the kind of movie that's nominated for Oscars. When the fact is, that scene where he freaks out is the only time that character has any expression whatsoever. Like, it's a completely different character than what is advertised in that scene. And it's like, guys, how about you just go and see the fucking movie? As opposed to, like, pulling little moments from it and pretending like, oh, I've exposed how cringeworthy it is. Again, this all comes back to my favorite word, cringe, which, as you know, I'm like becoming like Mr. Wilson from Dennis the Menace, screaming up this fucking word all the time.
That can work in the reverse, by the way, because remember last year, all those clips from Saltburn making people think it was an interesting movie?
Saltburn was really a case of, nobody can deny it was entertaining throughout, and then just the ending wasn't as good as the rest of the movie. So I think people felt like they were, you know, didn't get their money's worth ultimately. I thought there was a lot that was fun about that movie. I love Jacob Elordi. By the way, what are we doing with him?
Well, Jacob Elordi he's not starring in American Psycho, even though he was having those conversations with Luca Guadagnino when he was supposedly going to direct The Shards, Bret Easton Ellis's novel, right, from last year. Now Luca has switched to doing American Psycho, and he cast Austin Butler,
which I kind of see more than Jacob Elordi is not giving me Psycho.
Yeah. Also, Austin Butler sort of gives that vibe and that period. If you remember The Carey Diaries.
Oh, my God. Wait, he was on that?
He was the romantic lead.
Oh, my God. All I know is that, like, that little mini-me Kim Cattrall person looked way too much like Kim Cattrall. That was, like, the first instance of AI I'd ever seen.
Can we cast her in Just Like That?
She is that still going on? Or have they been sent to, you know, Guantanamo?
They sent Che Diaz to Guantanamo. But can we please just have that little Kim Cattrall show up? And then Samantha's just like, well, I visited this doctor and he de-aged me.
Actually, your impression is too good. It's too good.
Thank you. I've been working on it.
Okay. What else happened at this Golden Globes? I did love the bit when they showed the leaderboard in terms of who had been mentioned during speeches. And they said, God, our eternal creator, zero. I thought that was so funny.
Well, there weren't that many black winners.
Yeah. Yeah, this wasn't exactly a Mary J. Blige at the Grammys situation.
Yes. And you had Zoe Saldana up there winning. But she was, honestly, I loved her win. I'm like very happy for her. I don't need her to win the Oscar.
Uh-huh. Who do you need to win the Oscar? Tell me about your needs.
Well, first of all, she's in supporting, so
I know.
I don't
right.
know. You know, because I keep confusing her category. I was telling a friend that she won lead actor because I just know that she's the lead in that fucking movie.
Yeah.
So she would be up against. Well, let's talk about the categories right now, like the women's race and what the Golden Globes means for these women.
Yeah, so at the Oscars this year, Zoe Saldana will probably be up for Emilia Perez. She will almost certainly be up against Ariana Grande in Wicked, probably Felicity Jones in The Brutalist. Guys, I have still not seen this movie. And you have to set aside like a day and a half to do it. Like you have to pack like
afternoon.
Three lunches and stuff.
I'm seeing it this week.
I cannot wait. My friends are obsessed with it. Margaret Qualley in The Substance. I don't think she'll get it. She was just nominated. That's a very Globie nomination. And then, of course, Isabella Rossellini in Conclave, who, as you know, printed a couple documents.
You were
it's
about to
so
say Clown Cave.
Upsetting. It's so upsetting. And then people are like defensive about her online. Like I posted a joke about her. I was like, does anybody like how the Golden Globes keeps cutting back to Isabella Rossellini every 50 minutes? Because then you're going to love Conclave. And somebody responded with, good, I love her. Bitch, who doesn't love Isabella Rossellini? She's barely in this movie. It's so crazy to give her an Oscar nomination. She's been on this podcast. I interviewed her for NPR. We love her. She likes animals a lot. Great. Doesn't deserve an Oscar nomination for this movie.
Yeah, supporting actor. I definitely think that Ariana Grande is going to shift back to being a front runner.
Yeah. It's... Okay, we're going to get back into Ariana Grande and Wicked. The line readings were good. I laughed every time. I would argue it was a similar line reading most of the time. And I would also argue she was acting the part of a character actress and not being a character actress. She was playing at Kristen Chenoweth, not being Kristen Chenoweth. That's what I have to say about that.
So who do you think is going to be supporting in the Oscars race, possibly, that was not nominated for a Globe?
Well, this is utterly wishful thinking. I don't think it's going to happen. I still am holding out hope for fucking Danielle Deadwyler. I mean, it's like I was like put on earth to like represent this woman. I feel like a lawyer or something. I feel like she's so amazing in Piano Lesson, a movie that has not been talked about for even a second. Movie's okay. I mean, I don't love John David Washington's performance in it. Maybe that's what's turning people away. I don't know. I loved Anjanue Ellis-Taylor in Nickel Boys. Did you see that?
Yes, I did. And I mean, I can't wait to talk to Marianne about her conversation with Anjanue for The Wrap. They did sort of an actors on actors conversation and it was gorgeous.
Well, Anjanue is this talent freak. She can do anything. Her roles have nothing to do with each other. She's amazing in that movie.
I was shocked that that was her, to be honest.
Yeah. No, it doesn't remind me of Origin at all. It doesn't remind me of King Richard at all.
Would love a nomination for her, but, you know, it is the Oscars.
Yeah, right. I'm feeling a bit dire about the Oscar nominations. I feel like it's just the movies that have stuck around, in quote unquote, in the conversation, and like the critical darlings are going away.
Yeah, well, to continue with actresses then, you know, the Golden Globes divide the categories into drama and then also musical or comedy. So I'm not sure who is actually going to end up with an Oscar nomination. But Demi Moore, who won for Best Performance in a Musical or Comedy, I think she sort of clinched her Oscar nomination with this win.
Well, also, first of all, if anybody ever looked like a winner in awards history, it was Demi Moore, dressed absolutely like a statuette. And if you ever read the blog Tom and Lorenzo, they'll tell you, if you want an Oscar, you have to dress like one. And she was in this perfect sterling sheath. And her speech was absolutely flawless. And do you know what was great about the speech she gave? It was planned to the nth. The idea that you're supposed to get up there and be extemporaneous or, you know, not know what you're going to say or stumble into what you're going to say. She had every word of that planned, and it was great for that reason. I really recommend people take Demi Moore's hint and just not waste people's time. It was such a great speech. And I think people now want to see even more of that speech. So it feels like she is a shoo-in to get an Oscar nomination. I will say, when I watched that movie, and I like that movie less than other people do, to me, it was not screaming out for awards attention in the acting, even though they both do a good job, Margaret Qualley and Demi Moore. I will say about that movie, what I like about it is it's like a fairy tale, but the original version of the fairy tale. Like, you know how I'm just making this up. If you look up Cinderella, it's like, oh, in the original version, she got her hands chopped off or whatever. Like, it's like dark secretly. That's what this movie feels like. It's a simple.
The sisters dance to death,
yes,
actually.
Precisely.
In hot metal shoes.
Yes, precisely. So it's a cool movie on that front. And also, it is an unusual movie in the Oscars conversation, and I have to embrace those conversational moments.
Yeah, I mean, also, if you have not read Demi Moore's memoir,
Jesus Christ,
we talked about it on the show.
Yeah,
it is fantastic. I just love her.
She is just prepared for this moment. She seems very like, you know what? At this moment, it's me, and I'm going to make it happen. And here come amazing speeches.
Yeah. Well. Also in her category, the rest of the nominees, I do not think we'll see Amy Adams nominated for an Oscar for Night Bitch.
It's just a movie that doesn't work, unfortunately. They had this high concept of like layering on this feral quality to the repression that happens when you're raising a kid, and it just doesn't work. And I think she's the wrong actress to sort of act that out.
I watched it last week, and honestly, I respected more the concept of what you give up when you're an artist.
Yes.
I wish it would have dug into that a bit more, but my main problem with it was, one, her grad school artist friends seem like assholes and like parodies of artists. Yeah. So I wasn't really sure what world she wanted to get back to. And then at the end, when, you know, she was inspired by, you know, her Night Bitch era to create art, part of me was like, well, maybe you weren't an artist because you didn't have anything to say.
Yeah, no, like if this is now what it took to make that art. Yeah. And also, that's so hard. Like when an artist has to produce something in order to like fulfill the needs of the narrative, because now we're sitting as the audience judging the art and we're like, well, that's fucking mediocre. It's all about that.
Mm-hmm. Unlike Big Eyes.
Oh my God, she's done this before.
You're right. You know, that she played a better artist.
Yes, that's true. Though that movie ending, and I guess it's taken from real life, with Christoph Waltz in that courtroom, running up to the witness stand and then questioning himself. I mean, it was giving Fawlty Towers or something. I had never seen any sort of, they were just running around over there.
I'm also remembering this incorrectly or whatever, but I believe there was a joke back in the day when that movie came out that Cola Scola had written something about like you painting them big eyes.
The joke is, I'm sorry, my friends quote this all the time. It comes up all the time. Cola Scola said about big eyes being the Keen woman, Judith Keen, I forget what her name is, as her, I painted those eyes big and I don't regret a thing. Anyway, very funny.
Cynthia Erivo, I'm sure will still get a nomination.
She's on the bubble for me, though, because maybe. I feel like Wicked is also sort of not lapsing out of the conversation, but not as central to the conversation as people once promised it would be.
I think people are also just cognizant of the fact that we are getting Wicked Part 2 and we're going to do this shit all over again.
That
so
is very true.
Why bother to laud Cynthia Erivo right now, especially when you know that Wicked Part 2 is Elphaba's movie.
Right. And more emotionally searing, really, you know.
Yeah. I hope Carla Sophia does not drop out, but I could see it happening.
That was very smart of the director to let Carla Sophia Gascon give the speech when Emilia Perez won the musical or comedy Golden Globe, because we hadn't heard from her. And actually, throughout the ceremony, she had kind of like an unreadable grimace on her face. I didn't know what was going on there. And then she gave this appreciative, very cool speech. So it really it was a nice sort of narrative arc for her over the evening.
It was nice to give her something to say, nice to put her front and center too, and remind people that if they are planning to award Emilia Perez for the Oscars, which is your choice, Oscar voters, then they should not forget the trans woman at the center of it. Speaking of people dropping out of the conversation, I'm very sad for Mikey Madison. Like, what's going on here?
Yes, because Once Upon a Time, because we were all about this performance, and she definitely dominates that movie. Like, the second that character comes on the screen, you're like, this is her movie. It's called Anora for a reason. Very amusing, emotional, rough. Just, it's a complicated role. It's also, she just dominates every frame she's in. I can't imagine any other actress playing the part, which I don't know if I can say that about. Like, I feel like I could see other people play Demi's role in The Substance, whereas Anora is purely Mikey Madison.
Yeah, I don't see Zendaya getting a nomination for Challengers.
I guess we have to just hope for the score situation with that movie, even though I believe, yes, I had heard that Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross, they're putting forth the Challengers soundtrack, not the Queer soundtrack, which also has some interesting music on it.
Yeah. Honestly, the music I enjoyed better than the film.
Well, some of the needle drops in that movie are like, girl, what? I'm sorry, when they meet, and this is a movie that takes place in the 1950s, and Come As You Are by Nirvana plays, I had friends be like, oh, I like that choice. Bitch, why? It makes no sense. You just like any old song? Because you like that song? They play Jeremy by Pearl Jam.
They play Espresso. Yes. Would you love that? Would you love that, faggots?
Would you love that, faggots? Oh, we are pigs.
When we're back, more Golden Globes. Keep It is brought to you by OneSkin. As we kick off the new year, I wanted to share a little secret. Over the past few years, I've actually stopped setting these grand resolutions. Instead, I've made it a habit to do something good for my health every day, and that includes using OneSkin.
Only OneSkin has the OS1 peptide, the first ingredient to target cellular senescence, a root cause of aging responsible for lines, wrinkles, and crepey skin. With OneSkin's groundbreaking approach, you're not just helping your skin look and feel younger and healthier on the surface, you're helping it behave better at the cellular level. So you'll see improvements now and in the future.
Remember, it's the small habits that add up to big changes. So whether you're looking for a scientifically proven cleanser, moisturizer, sunscreen, or whole new routine, we love the complete skin longevity regimen here. OneSkin can seriously transform your skin. Give it 12 weeks and see for yourself. Make 2025 the year you invest in habits that keep your skin healthier and help you look your best. Use code KEEPIT for an exclusive 15% off at oneskin.co.
The minute I put this OneSkin product on my skin, first of all, the smell of it I love. It's a very earthy kind of terracotta smell. And then the heaviness of it mixed with the smoothness of it makes you feel like your skin is already tauter and better and cuter to look at, frankly.
Yeah, no, I noticed the smell immediately. It's great. Who needs the substance?
Oh, my God. And I thought it was me. I was like, sign me up for that. I thought the movie was just a brochure for The Substance. I said, let's go.
Founded by an all-women team of skin longevity scientists, OneSkin is redefining the aging process with their proprietary OS1 peptide, the first ingredient proven to help skin look, feel, and behave like its younger self. Your skin stand in the club. Get 15% off with code KEEPIT at oneskin.co. That's 15% off oneskin.co with code KEEPIT.
After you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them we sent you. Invest in the health and longevity of your skin with OneSkin. Your future self will thank you.
For a limited time, you can get a Big Mac meal for just $8. That's a burger, fries, and a drink. They don't call it an extra value meal for nothing. Get a Big Mac meal only at McDonald's.
Price and participation may vary. Promotion pricing may be lower than meal pricing.
And we are back. So the actress race was a shock. Fernanda Torres won. for which, I'm still here, okay, which I still need to see.
Me too. I feel bad about that. Let me just say this about Fernanda Torres. So this was mentioned during the ceremony. The last time a Brazilian actress was nominated for this award, it was her own mother, Fernanda Montenegro, who still with us. I believe she's the oldest living Best Actress nominee. Take that, Joanne Woodward. And she's also in this movie, I'm Still Here. I'm so psyched to see this, especially because, so my friend Jan, who's Brazilian, I've never met a person more determined to prove that stereotypes about Brazil are true. He's like, look at this footage of people in Brazil celebrating when Fernanda Torres won the Golden Globe. Girl, people are like waving hankies out a window and shit. They were obsessed.
Too bad the Golden Globes didn't happen during New Year's when all the gays were there.
Yeah, right. Oh, Rio, no kidding. Yeah,
it really would have gone up for Fernanda. I am excited for her getting into the race, although someone pointed out that the majority of Golden Globe voters are Brazilian.
Right. It does feel a bit... Well, it's like Isabel Huppert won that award a couple years ago, and obviously she is clearly a genius and was amazing in Elle, but she was never even really considered a factor for the win here that year she lost to Emma Stone in La La Land, you know? So, yeah. And also, let's just say, I don't think the Golden Globes have ever had less relevance. Just who is real? Like, things like the SAGs and the Critics' Choice Awards have taken the place of what we once thought the Golden Globes were.
Yeah. Shout out to Pamela Anderson for The Last Showgirl, which I have not seen yet. Don't think she'll get the Oscar nomination.
Absolutely not.
Angelina Jolie and Nicole Kidman are icons who we love, but both of them, I feel like I'm on the fence for whether or not they'll get nominated. I think that they're both amazing in two movies that I didn't particularly love.
Well, that's interesting. I want to get into that for a second. First of all, there's Maria, which... a genre of movie I like, which is, as you know, 2-hour De Beers commercial. And she's just wandering into frame, like blowing kisses at us and then walking on. But yeah, I'm kind of ready for her to exit this conversation. I think she's good in the movie, but the movie isn't good enough to sort of fit in that category. Nicole, meanwhile, I think is amazing and should be nominated. I just think that movie, and I think we've discussed this before, is too traditionally an affair movie. It's like it can't figure out what to do with itself once the jig is up.
Yeah, Adrian Lin, where are you?
Yeah, and the patron saint of Keep It. We love this man.
I think that Tilda Swinton, another movie that I haven't seen, but I'm seeing it Friday. I'm seeing it Friday. Yes, I'm having a Almodovar afternoon date with my friend Juan, who's been on the show before. We are going to see The Room Next Door. Finally, it's playing at the Angelica. I've been waiting for this fucking movie to be playing forever. And I'm excited to see it, mostly because the reactions to it have been very divided. People have either loved it or they've been like, this is one of Pedro's worst films ever.
Well, I mean, it's a Tilda Swinton, Julianne Moore, Pedro Almodovar movie. I think it was hardly going to be like, oh, what an easy swallow this one was. You know, like, oh, the difficult choices people of all time.
Now, what do you think about Ms. Kate Winslet being nominated for
Lee? That is one of the worst fucking movies I've ever seen her in, Lee.
That's my middle name.
Yes. She plays a photographer, and it's like an interesting story. Like, this woman was, like, got a picture in, like, Hitler's bathroom or something, and she staged it, and she got in the bath. Anyway, though, it feels like they were just recreating, like, Wikipedia paragraphs and turning it into one chronological movie. And at the end, the gimmick, you find out where she's talking to her son, and it turned out she's been dead for years and they never had a relationship. I wanted to throw, like, heavy machinery at the TV.
Andy Samberg, though.
Oh, yes. He got to be prestigious in a film, which I've never seen done before.
That's always fun when our SNL people turn up in something serious. Like, remember when Tina Fey did Whiskey Tango Foxtrot?
Right. No, do you know what I just thought of? When Nick Kroll is in the movie Loving? What the fuck?
He pops up in the weirdest shit, actually.
No, and it's also like, whenever an SNL person is in a movie like this, I'm like, did you do this over your summer? Like, this is how you spent your summer? Okay.
We can move on to the actor race.
Oh, I guess.
Adrian Brody winning.
I feel like that's the only sure thing. Yeah. I think that's the only sure thing this year. Adrian Brody is almost certainly going to pick up his second Oscar. That was also, I think, my favorite joke of the night from Nikki Glaser, two-time Holocaust survivor.
Oh, that was fucking hilarious.
Come on, rolls right off the tongue.
Adrian Brody, we've already talked about how we both need to see The Brutalist, but I thought his speech was sort of a good version of that extemporaneous thing, you know, sort of off the cuff. He didn't really have something planned, but I'm sure he had an idea of what he wanted to say. And I think this was more shocked that The Brutalist was winning a bunch of shit, because I feel like everyone thought that The Brutalist was sort of not in the conversation early on.
Yeah, right. Also, I was worried about that speech when it started, because he was saying things like, I have a lot to say. And then, of course, he stopped talking. And I was like, well, it sounds like you're not getting to it. But he kept it clippy and kept it moving.
So Timothy Chalamet, do we think he's going to get an Oscar nomination?
Yes, though I feel like this is dead in the water. Like, there's no way he's going to win. It is like a pretty...
he's great.
I think he's great as Bob Dylan. I will say it is jarring, though. He looks exactly like Billy Joe Armstrong throughout the movie. I was like, this is a Green Day biopic. You're wrong.
American Idiot next.
I don't not see it for him. I also think the movie is like, I don't know if it's just I'm entertained and like that era, but to me, it was never putting on airs. It was never like, you're supposed to think of this man as a god. You're supposed to just think, oh yeah, he came on the scene, he was well respected, and then he made this one decision that actually people hated. I didn't find it to be like, I didn't find it to be exalting him in a way that I think these movies often annoyingly do.
Yeah, and I think what helps was that James Mangold directed the film. You know, I think he sort of did the same thing with one of the best X-Men movies that ever exists, Logan. And I think he's also great with Girl Interrupted, obviously, our queen, Angelina. And Ford versus Ferrari is a film.
Ford versus Ferrari, I believe a Best Picture nominee.
Yeah.
Who's going to win, the Ford or the Ferrari? I am so stoked to learn.
Sebastian Stan.
What a good night for him. What a good night for him.
He won for A Different Man, which has been one of my favorite fucking movies of the past year. And I'm so glad that it won Best Film at the New York Critics. And then him winning for lead actor in this was a shock for me. Like, I feel like every time I bring this movie up to people, no one has seen it or even heard of it.
Well, first of all, it's an interesting movie this year because, first of all, it's kind of substance coded. Like, what happens in the movie is about one artifice and replacing it with another youthful kind. But the movie is actually a lot weirder than even the premise lets on. And what the movie is ultimately about, the humor of it, the strangeness of it, the bleakness of it. It's also just formally a comedy. All the actors in it are doing a lot of really funny work. Oh my God, Renata Reinsve from The Worst Person in the World is the actress in this movie. This woman is amazing. It is a hilarious and weirdo performance.
This movie is as funny as any early fucking Simpsons episode, to be honest.
Yeah.
Like, later, when the movie starts getting more absurd and farcical, I don't want to ruin it for people, but the last maybe 30, 40 minutes of this movie are completely bonkers.
It's so shocking. It's so not what you expect. It really is a one-of-a-kind movie. As I was watching it, I was almost upset at the choices it was making. And then afterwards, I had to acknowledge it was bold.
Yeah. So he was also nominated for The Apprentice. I don't think he'll be nominated for that, obviously, for the Oscars. But I'm hoping for A Different Man. There's Daniel Craig, Coleman Domingo, and Ralph Fiennes. I think Coleman is still pretty much secured for a nomination for Sing Sing.
It would be really bizarre if he didn't get nominated. Also, by the way, I just want to say I loved him in Rustin, his last nomination. That was like, he created an F word for the ages. That was a gay man.
Daniel Craig?
He, I think, unfortunately, is falling out of the conversation because you and I are the only people who have seen the movie Queer. That's it.
Yeah. And Conclave, obviously, Ralph Fiennes didn't do as much as Isabel Rossellini in the film.
Well, he didn't have any documents to print. Yeah.
I think that we also have Jesse Eisenberg, Hugh Grant, Gabriel LaBelle, Jesse Plemons, Glenn Powell. I don't really see any of them popping up.
No, though Hugh Grant, that would be a pretty inspired choice because I think everybody loves him in that movie, Heretic. And also, I just love him now more than ever. We've talked about how I think he's risen to be one of my favorite actors, not just because of what you expect from him in like Four Weddings and a Funeral. I love all the weirdo choices he makes in like Paddington. I loved him in that. We were talking with Kat Cohen about that a very British Scandal. That was such a good show too.
Kieran Culkin was
steamrolling
so
to
fucking
victory.
Good in A Real Pain too. A movie I love that movie. Actually, it's so funny and it's so uncomfortable to watch, but it's really funny. And on a second watch, I watched it again. It was a lot easier to sort of take. I think it's a movie that you sort of don't know where it's going when you're watching it, and you're afraid that it's maybe going to drive off the cliff. But once you know that, you know, you're in good hands with Jesse Eisenberg and you've seen it, it's a great rewatch.
Kieran Culkin is really good in it. If you haven't seen this movie, it's about these cousins reuniting and they go on this tour of the Holocaust, basically. And Kieran Culkin plays somebody who is abrasive and strange and makes uncomfortable social choices, but at the same time, people are endeared to him. And this really vexes Jesse Eisenberg, who is a more quote-unquote normally behaved person. It's a very relatable experience when you think you're with somebody who is humiliating you at every turn, and yet somehow he's playing better with others than you are. It's just like, I think, a universally relatable situation. I've heard people say it's a little too close to his character in Succession, that like, why is he like steamrolling to victory? But I think it's actually a pretty heavy responsibility. He makes the whole movie occur. He makes the action of the movie believable and the tension of the movie believable. And if anything, the problem is he is the clear lead of this movie. And this is another example of category fraud.
Scam.
But, yeah.
Yeah, it's a scam. Also, I don't see him as his character from Succession at all. I see him as he's much more human and relatable in A Real Pain, to be honest.
Honestly, the problem with A Real Pain, and we had Jennifer Grey here, we loved her in the movie, great performance, is the title A Real Pain. Because you realize, oh, he's a real pain, and also he has a real pain. I'm falling on a sword.
But then it's funny when you discover that it's water on the knee.
Operation. Yes.
And lastly, I need my daddy, Denzel Washington, to still get nominated.
It is, again, my problem with that performance is he's the only very interesting part of that movie to me. And I think he could have been even daffier. He could have been running more bathhouses and stuff. I wanted to see him really getting into it.
I rewatched the film and I enjoyed it less this time. It really is Denzel's movie. I was actually more annoyed that there's moments where he's like, when he's laughing and doing jokes and interacting with people, you cut right to a next scene so quickly. I wish you lived in some of the scenes more.
Nothing about that movie was you're living there. Everything was chop, right. Chop, chop. You're exactly right. Yes.
It's weird to say about a movie that's so fucking long, but it really is just like, here we go, next plot point.
Yeah, right, precisely.
Do we think that anything in the Best Director conversation is going to change from the Golds? Obviously, Brady Corbet won for The Brutalist. By the way, I loved his speech. I love him from his acting days, too. If you have not seen Mysterious Skin, watch that movie.
I completely forget that he's in that movie. That was one of my formative queer viewing experiences. Mysterious Skin stars Joseph Gordon-Levitt. I think we talked about this with Joseph Gordon-Levitt when he was on the show. Great queer film from the 2000s, very low budget. It's a harrowing movie. It's a movie about trauma, too. But Brady Corbet is excellent in that movie. And he also directed the movie Vox Lux, starring Natalie Portman, which I have mixed opinions about that. The movie starts with a very realistic school shooting and then follows up with the like dumbest story about a pop star, which
the girls love it.
It's provocative art. It's provocative. I don't like the provocation necessarily.
Yes. Obviously, I think that Sean Baker will probably get a nomination as well.
Yes, though I think Brady is going to walk away with Best Director. Yes, during his speech at the Globes, he was talking about randomly how directors deserve Final Cut, say. It was very like Inside Baseball in a strange way that I liked him putting four. At the same time, it is pretty funny. Him being like, auteurs need more ground to do whatever they fucking want. Like, as my friend Devin Field said, he goes, who will stand up for the Tarantinos? Yeah.
You know what? I think maybe one of the first times I learned the phrase Final Cut, it was in Scream 3.
Right, of course, yes.
When Roman kills the director, he's like, I'll give you anything, Final Cut. And then he's like, I have it, and he slits his throat.
Cute. That move, that franchise really has it together, even during its lowest moments.
You mean the upcoming Zionist version? Scream 7? That everyone is coming back for now, by the way.
So weird.
Courtney Cox has signed on for it. Nev has signed on for it. They just said, well, you've all forgot about that girl, right?
That is such a strange situation. Anyway.
Lastly, I will just say that, obviously, I think that there'll be more to come for Wicked once Wicked Part 2 comes out, but... Man, it was LOL seeing Wicked win box office achievement presented by Vin Diesel.
Oh my God, who looked like Winnie the Pooh for Armani, baby. him coming out and addressing The Rock, what the fuck was that choice about? Like they have a feud or something? So weird. And also, John Chu having to give that speech was sort of confused because I think it's a very confusing award. It's like, wow, you did a commercial thing and we're turning this into an award. Very the Billboard Music Awards.
He was amped. I mean, listen, it sounded like he'd been partying at the Oz Dust Ballroom. And I love John Chu. He's been on this show. I adore that man. But it was very much giving, I have to get this speech out because I'm never going to be on this stage again.
Right. Well, I mean.
Because Wicked, I don't think, is going to get any sort of other nominations besides Ariana and some technical ones and song, obviously.
Yeah, I feel like Cynthia's not getting in the way like Margot Robbie didn't get in for Barbie. You know, just ultimately the thing people will reward about it is something else. Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, not song, because there's no original song in this one, but there are, I believe, two new original songs in Wicked Part 2. So once again, there's nominations to come for Wicked next year.
I would love for that category to matter again. So that'll be exciting.
Yeah. I think my parting thought on the Globes is last night I watched Viola Davis's Cecil B. DeMille Award speech, and I am pissed that it was not in the ceremony.
Well, first of all, she's like the speech team captain of all time. She shows up and you're like,
can we get
a
book of all her speeches?
Put your monologue from Our Town away, because she is going to fucking clock your ass. She'll do the whole August Wilson songbook, the whole 10-play cycle.
She's given good fucking speeches, but this one was really theatrical. And maybe it's because it wasn't for the ceremony, actually, is why she leaned in so much, because it's 16 minutes.
Hell yeah.
And yeah.
Come on, Greer Garson, get up there. Yeah.
And when she gives this just... speech, she talks about how, you know, life is like an old fat man who's dropping gold coins on people who don't deserve it, and he's falling over on people indiscriminately, and talking about how she grew up in poverty, seeing rats, and they didn't have a toilet that flushed, and she wet the bed, and she was weird, and people didn't call her pretty, and then that leads into taking roles for money, and meeting her husband, and finding, like, the magic in acting. I was just like, God damn. Like, she would win an Oscar for that speech if it were in a movie.
Yeah, right. No, she is one of a kind. I mean, like, she's a frightening Yale grad, and just, you put her in anything, and she's so game 100%. I kind of am ready for her to do, like, a really hard comedy, because I think she also, as much as she is, like, serious speech team woman, I think she also loves, like, oh, you want me to fucking lay you out? Like, she'll like, read a bitch to filth.
We love to laugh, child.
Yeah.
We love a good laugh. But honestly, this was also the last time I sort of want to hear the joke about how they said you're going to be the next Meryl, because that's in every speech, I feel like. Yeah, it's the runner. Can we just put them in a fucking comedy together? Give
Please.
Us fucking... But I want... You know, I have mixed thoughts about the overall movie, mostly Roseanne's performance in it. But if we could get She-Devil Meryl and Viola...
I chemically cannot watch Only Murders in the Building, but it sounds like Meryl is giving that kind of performance on that show. So I think this is available to us.
All right. When we are back, we will be joined by the words can't even describe how amazing this woman is, Marianne Jean-Baptiste.
This podcast is sponsored by Squarespace. Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for entrepreneurs to stand out and succeed online. Whether you're just starting out or managing a growing brand, Squarespace makes it easy to create a beautiful website, engage with your audience, and sell anything from products to content to time, all in one place, all on your terms. Introducing Design Intelligence from Squarespace, combining two decades of industry-leading design expertise with cutting-edge AI technology to unlock your strongest creative potential. Design Intelligence empowers anyone to build a beautiful, more personalized website tailored to their unique needs and craft a bespoke digital identity to use across one's entire online presence. Squarespace Payments is the easiest way to manage your payments in one place with Squarespace. Onboarding is fast and simple. Get started in just a few clicks and start receiving payments right away. Plus, give your customers more ways to pay with popular payment methods like Klarna, ACH Direct Debit, Apple Pay, Afterpay, and Clearpay. Connect major social and multimedia accounts to your website in a few clicks as icons, direct links, or embedded feeds. Build visitor trust while updating content only where you need it, extending your brand's footprint. Sellers can also sync their product catalog directly with Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, and Google to reach more customers and reduce the steps for a purchase. Head to squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/keepit to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/keepit.
Your sausage McMuffin with egg didn't change. Your receipt did. The sausage McMuffin with egg extra value meal includes a hash brown and a small coffee for just $5. Only at McDonald's for a limited time.
Price and participation may vary. Promotion pricing may be lower than meal pricing.
You know this week's guest from Secrets and Lies and Without a Trace, but she also gave one of Lewis and I's favorite performances of the year in Mike Leigh's Hard Truths. The film offers a spectacularly layered look at mental health, family ties, and how the two intersect in humorous and heartbreaking ways. You've won the National Society of Film Critics Award, the New York Film Critics Circle, and the LA Film Critics Association. We are wanting that Oscar for you. Please welcome to Keep It. It's Marianne Jean-Baptiste.
Thank you.
Oh my God. I mean, it's so staggering to even bring up this movie because it's about such an unusual character. This is basically a woman who gets into a hostile confrontation every time she leaves the house. It might just even be with herself. It can be with anybody, and you're sort of figuring out what's with her, and then the movie doesn't give you any easy solutions. And then when you read about making this movie and the months and months and months of character work that went into creating it, it's extra staggering. I mean, there's probably nobody on the planet who knows a single character better than you know this person.
Oh, no, that's right. Yeah, because we create them from scratch, basically. You know, whenever you work with Mike Leigh, you know the instructions are, I don't know what it's about. I don't know what you'll be doing in it. But we're going to have a good time and we're going to go on a journey of discovery. Mm. And that's what happens.
And so I listened to this beautiful conversation that you had with Anjanue Ellis about your roles in this in Hard Truth and hers in Nickel Boys. And you talked a bit about creating this character. And I guess you said that Mike tells you to come in with, you know, sort of five people you imagine, and then you're sort of creating a character from, you know, an amalgam of these people. But, you know, sort of who did you come in with when you started this? You know, what was on your mind? I'm working with Mike again. He's asking me to bring something in. Like, what did you just sort of think about bringing to the table?
Well, you know, with Mike, as you previously mentioned, it's not my first rodeo. Mm-hmm. So I actually went in with a list of over 100 people.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And so, and we sit down and you discuss all of the characters and whittle them down. And we landed on about five people. I'm really sorry. The tea's arrived.
Please get the tea.
Yeah.
So, you know, I ended up with about five people.
Mm-hmm.
But that is just to root the character in reality.
Mm-hmm.
Because at that point is we do these exercises, which he calls trade secrets, and to merge the characters, which are both physical and, you know, lots of discussion. And then you start again from scratch. You say, okay, do you feel this person? Do you get a sense of who they are? And you go, yeah, I do. Or you kind of go, oh, God, yeah, no, I'm not sure. And you start from first memory. Okay, then you work up all the way through going to school, teachers, friends, or not having friends in some people's cases. And then when they get to a certain age, you might go into rehearsal room and somebody else will be sat there. Like in my case, it was Michelle Austin. And he'd say, okay, these two characters are going to be playing sisters. And of course, she would have gone through the same process in isolation with him. And then you start again, you know, Pansy's 3 years older than Chantal. So what was it like when she came home from the hospital? Blah, blah, blah. Then you start making a history together.
And that history is very apparent on screen. Like you watch this family interact and it just feels like there's a lot of shared history there. But also staggering about this movie is just the amount of like silences among the family here. Like this is a movie that you kind of think is going to be all hard conversations. And then it really turns a corner into something totally different, which also brings to mind something else that's crazy about the situation. You have no script when you start with Mike Lee. You have no idea what's going to happen or basically even how big your part's going to be. So when you're making this movie, are you just putting all your trust in him? Or do you feel like, do you just throw your hands up and say, I have no idea what I'm giving. I hope it's enough.
Yeah, literally. I mean, you do, because I should mention as well that he makes it very clear from the beginning. You will only know what your character knows.
Mm.
So in a lot of the sessions when we're working together, for example, like, you know, Pansy's memory of Chantal coming home from the hospital, Michelle would have to pop out of the room because she wouldn't know what Pansy thought about her coming home from the hospital. So it kind of keeps everything honest. You cannot sort of like pre-plan anything. Oh, I'm going to react like this, or, you know, that's going to happen, because you don't know what's going to happen. It's like life, you know. We can make assumptions about things, but we don't know for sure.
Do you ever think to yourself, Mike Lee, can you please just be normal? Can you please just make this easier for me? I'm in here for months making this damn movie with you.
There are times where you just, like, I mean, I'd go home from rehearsals, especially when you're working with him in isolation. And it's just you and him talking all day. And I'd just be like, I don't want to talk to anyone. I do not want to be asked another question ever in life. You know? Yeah, you want to strike. Well, I mean, when he killed off Pearl, who is Chantel and Pansy's mother, we wanted to kill him. We were just like, we were so attached to her. And we went out and had a drink together to commiserate after rehearsals, because we were like, God, who could play Pearl? What actress is he going to bring in? We were getting really excited about it. Then he killed her off and it was like, damn.
So my question, I guess, is the next question is about the technical aspects of your rehearsing, you're improvising. At what point do you sort of solidify a scene? Is it then transcribed, or, you know, how can you get sort of the script there so that the other parts of the film can sort of come into play?
Right. So what happens is, like, we worked 14 weeks. The majority of those 14 weeks are spent building the world, building all the characters, the history, you know, relationships, going right up until where the film starts. At that point, we move into location. And he likes to say, scene by scene, location by location, sequence by sequence, we improvise. And those improvisations are repeated and honed and are very, very sort of like locked in. So by the time we shoot anything, nothing is improvised on camera.
Mm.
Everybody knows exactly what they're going to do, you know, what their motivation is and all that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm. I love that process. And I think it, during your conversation with Anjanou, you also talked about how your first work with Mike Lee was in 93 on a play. Mm. And I was trying to look up more information on it. It was called It's a Great Big Shame. But what was it like doing, I guess, theater with Mike Lee and it being your first time getting to work with him?
Oh, my God. It was crazy. It was, I mean, when you're in drama school, you do all these exercises and you explore and all that sort of stuff. And so you come out of drama school and then you go into the traditional way of doing things. But so going back to work with him again was like going back to school.
Mm.
You know, you get to use your imagination. You sit there and you go, okay, what, for example, with Hard Truths, you know, what does Pansy like? And the list would be tiny. But we'd sit there for ages going, okay, she doesn't like kiwi. She doesn't like coconut. And say, why? And I said, because they're hairy. And then you go, what about peaches? I said, she hates peaches. And I mean, it's like, you know, you sit there and, you know, it's just a wonderful experience because you're like a kid, you know, and he encourages so much curiosity. You just kind of remember like, oh, God, yeah, this is what it's like to be curious, to want to sort of seek the particular in certain situations and find the nuances. And you have the time to do it, which is great.
I want to say also about this character of Pansy. Not only, I'm sure when people come up to you and talk about this movie, they're telling you about somebody it reminds them of, and they would never tell that person she reminds them of her. Like, this is a character who is, like, toxic in every way, and yet also, reminds you of real people. So you're like thinking of somebody who like treats the waiter that way or treats the person at the furniture store that way. Yeah. Have you found yourself like being entrusted with secrets about people's personal lives and the people they're dealing with the time?
God. Yeah, I mean, after one of the Q&As, a guy walked up to me and said, because I'd explained about the list of people, he goes, oh, my mother-in-law was probably on that list, right?
Oh, Jesus. Yeah.
And his wife kind of gave him a very dirty look. But I've had mothers, aunties, mother-in-laws, grandmothers. I mean, everybody's got a pansy. Everyone. Some people have even professed to being pansies. And I'm like, no, you're too self-aware. There's no way you could be a pansy. You know?
Which reminds me, by the way, I think when I met you a few weeks ago at that dinner, you had said that it's actually sort of comfortable for you to watch yourself in this role because it's so unlike you that you don't for a second think, oh, I'm watching myself on the screen. It's nothing like me up there.
Yeah. It's great because I remember at the rap party, they were just showing little clips, you know, because none of us had seen, we don't see the film until we see the film. So we don't know what it's about in its entirety. And I looked up and I saw Pansy and I was like, oh my God, I don't look like that, do I? And Michelle was like, no, you don't. You smile a lot more. You're happier. That's not you. Because it was, it just looks like somebody else. She looks... It's wonderful, actually. It's like my dream to transform as an actor, you know, and be unrecognizable. So it's a really, you know, it's a really great thing to kind of go, wow, that's her. That's not me.
Switching gears a little bit, just speaking too about you sort of transforming in a role, I recently got to finally see Peter Strickland's In Fabric, and that is just this like crazy, you know, giallo inspired like sort of horror movie about a killer dress, and sort of I just want to know, that seems like something so unlike the other work that you've done before. So, you know, what was it like preparing for that? Are those the kind of movies that you enjoy, or did you have to immerse yourself into that sort of genre before you worked on the film?
Right. I think that was, well, not a turning point, but it was, I kind of made a decision that I wanted to kind of go back to where I started in doing the type of work that I found interesting, that was going to be challenging and that I would have an experience with. And this script arrived. And my agent at the time sort of said, oh, this is a script. It's bonkers, but I love it, right? But I think you should give it a read. And I said, okay. And then I get another message saying, don't read it. Watch this film first, and then you'll get an idea. And I was like, it's too late. I've read it, and it's crazy. and he sent me Barbarian Sound Studio.
Oh.
And yeah, about 15 to 20 minutes in, I emailed him back and I was like, I'm in. I just want the experience of working with this guy because he seems out there. I want to see how he sees the world. I just want to know, you know. So that was great. I had a really good time on that, getting into her, Sheila. Yeah.
Before we let you go, I have to ask one thing. Since we want you on the path to Oscars glory, if you have any awesome memories from your time being nominated in the mid-90s for a movie that Ira and I, frankly, can't shut up about, Secrets and Lies.
We bring it up all the time.
One of the great best picture nominees of the 90s, a staggering film, a very emotional film where everybody is amazing. Every actor in it is fabulous. Do you have a particular favorite moment from that time?
From the Oscar time?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. It was so surreal. We didn't... I mean, I was at the gym. I was doing a film called Mr. Jealousy, which is a Noah Baumbach film at the time. And I was in the gym on the treadmill. And coming from Southeast London, the Oscars were something that happened far, far away in, you know, sunny Los Angeles. And we had no inkling that we were going to be, like, even talked about in that sphere. So I remember being on the treadmill and there were these little tellies up and people were sort of chatting and then nudging and poking and pointing. And this guy came up to me and he said, you've been nominated. And I was like, what? For what? And he goes, from the Academy Award. And I nearly fell off. It was just like, oh my gosh. And I got off and I didn't eat. I mean, I had to go back to the gym, to the locker to get my stuff. Because I just went back to the little apartment I was staying in to phone home and sort of go, oh, my, have you? And, of course, everybody else had heard. I was kind of the last one to know. But I remember that. That was lovely.
Oh, my God, that's amazing. Wow. Yeah. I've never gotten good news at the gym before. How exciting.
Yeah, it was very, very good.
Also, if our listeners have not seen you in Mr. Jealousy, that is like early Noah Baumbach. I believe it's right after Kicking and Screaming. And such a beautiful small film from him. So,
yeah.
Yeah. Marianne, thank you so much for joining us this week. I mean, you are truly phenomenal in this movie, and I just love your collaborations with Mike Lee. Like, I hope you get to do another one, you know, at some point.
Yeah, me too, but, you know.
Yeah.
He doesn't sort of, it takes it might, maybe 28 years from
now. Keep the record going, yeah.
Yeah. When we're back, keep it. And we are back for our favorite segment of the episode. It is Keep It. Lewis,
yes.
What's on your mind?
My Keep It this week is to the Cher memoir, which came out. I got it as a Christmas gift because I asked for it angrily. And
I would just give that to you in general.
No, like, I'm sure if you were in Barnes & Noble, I'm like, I better get this for Lewis just in case he doesn't have it. I'm excited to read it. I haven't even started yet. But I just learned that Cher does not do the full audiobook for her own memoir because she is... She is incredibly dyslexic, and she's not going to stand there and read the entire audiobook. So Stephanie J. Block, who won a Tony for playing Cher in the Cher show, is reading it. Cher bitch, unacceptable. Can you stand at the mic and just make up a memoir and say it into the microphone? Thank you. Just tell me what you remember about Sonny. Tell me what you remember about, I don't know, Johnny Carson being a dick to you or whatever's going on in the 60s and 70s. Tell me about I Got You, Babe. Tell me about Turn Back Time. Tell me about Believe. Tell me about Auto-Tune. Tell me about Chaz. Whatever. Just start. It can be a 15-minute audiobook. Great. I just want to hear those things and you saying it, being self-deprecating. Maybe, you know what she should have done? She should have had, stood at a mic, you know, the way like Fran Lebowitz does, and just taken questions and then responded to those. In fact, the question should have been only from me. It should just be me and her speaking. Remember when you were in Come Back to the Five and Dime, Jimmy Dean, Sharon? She's like, I sure do. You know, that'd be great.
I would, and you could finally get to the bottom of why she erased it from her filmography.
When she won that Oscar. Yes, she won an Oscar, and she said to Meryl Streep, you were in my first movie with me, which is not true. That was Silkwood, which is after Come Back to the Five and Dime, Jimmy Dean, and Chastity from the 60s. I'm like a movie detective.
I'd love to see that series.
Yeah. Oh, please. Let me
Lewis,
get to the bottom
movie
of
detective.
Yeah. Of let me get to the bottom of something that nobody is wondering about. Great.
It would be like Bored to Death.
Yes. Oh my God. Remember that show?
Yeah.
Zach Galifianakis. What are we doing with you?
He's behind like a couple ferns or something. I think they got one more.
he's behind three or four ferns.
Honestly, I am shocked that the book was not written just in a way where she spoke and they transcribed everything that she said.
Yeah.
Because then you could have just used that for the audiobook. You know, if you knew that was going to be the problem, I would have attacked it head on from the beginning, because you want a Barbara Streisand, you want a Mariah Carey moment from her doing the audiobook. By the way, when I'm at any party these days and holiday season, I was at many, you could just find me in a corner telling a gay man that he needs to listen to The Meaning of Mariah, the audiobook.
Oh,
because it's
please.
The best thing I've ever listened to.
No, it's that and the Barbara Streisand memoir. Again, I literally remember where I was listening to different parts of that book. I'm like, oh my God, I was in Puerto Vallarta when I got to What's Up Doc and all this stuff. Audiobooks stick with you. It's like a pretty underrated medium, even though it's a cheap fucking way to get a Grammy. And I'm looking at you, Helen Hayes.
Well, as you know, I am also in the midst of recording my audiobook.
Oh my God, I hate you being Grammy eligible. Takes a fucking village over here. Fuck you.
Either I will be Grammy nominated or I can say that I'm, you know, like Nicki Minaj.
Just nothing at all. Not on the board, shall we say.
I can rail against the Grammys when I'm not nominated in a Nicki style rant.
Right. Okay. Well, I look forward to that Queen Radio moment for you. Ira, what is your keep it?
Well, speaking of Queens, my keep it goes to a diva on the new series Selling the City, which, as you can imagine, is the New York version of Selling Sunset.
Okay.
This one takes place at Douglas Elliman, the real estate company, instead of the Oppenheimer Group, which is in Los Angeles and then also in Orange County for Selling the OC. The show is fun. You know, it's not as good as the other two series I just mentioned, but I love just spending time with women bickering while they're selling real estate.
Sure. Oh, yeah. No, real estate TV, unfortunately, is always good. I love that million-dollar listing show with those true douchebags.
But there is a woman on the show named Jordan Taylor whose big thing is that she used to date Trevor Noah.
Okay. Sure. I'm sure several people have.
And at one point in the series, she says, she talks about how they met. She says that they met on Twitter. And first of all, I'd like to see those interactions.
Okay.
They met on Twitter, and she says that she was the funny one in their relationship and that he often stole her material and she would see it on The Daily Show.
What on earth were they talking about all the time? What kind of geopolitical things were they just babbling about? And he was like, allow me to take this to the television.
Obviously, delusion is a big part of being a good reality star. You know, right. You want someone to be delusional. But this, we're jumping out the window here. Ma'am, I do not think that Trevor Noah was going into The Daily Show every day and repeating your jokes to the writing staff.
And then saying, and we have to put them in. You know, these can't be punched up. Well, also, it's like, it's very much like when you say something like that, you have to give me an example. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Say the thing you actually said that ended up on the show, because it's just so unlikely. Like drafts for shows like that go through like 7 or 8 iterations before they actually make it to air and they're pared down, et cetera. So for her, it seems very unlikely that something she would say at random would end up on the show.
And multiple times.
Right.
You know, yet like this isn't a Big Eyes situation here. Big
Which
jokes.
Is apparently our favorite movie. Yeah. Big Eyes, Big Jokes.
Also, but I do want to say something about that just in the sense of if you're dating like a comedian or a writer or something, obviously they draw from their real life and you draw from conversations that you have with people. Naturally, funny shit that you say with your friends will end up in your comedy. But when it goes through, as you said, drafts in a writer's room, or even just if you're a stand-up working on jokes and doing punch-ups or just finding out what works in a room and what doesn't, no one is lifting your comedy, girl.
Yeah, right. It doesn't feel diabolical. Like, I just can't picture a version where she's being screwed over to that nth degree. That said, I'm going to investigate myself. I want to see what this... Yeah. How is she funny?
She's kind of funny. She's kind of like a light bitch. Not as much as this girl, Jade, who was a full-on hater. Like, by the way, old school hater, okay? She is a bitch and is constantly attacking this girl, Eleanor. And yet on the show, people keep saying, I thought they were friends. And when they're not in the same scene as each other, they're always like, well, you know, she's my good friend, but she's really pissing me off.
Oh, wow. They're really at it. Okay.
Yeah. But anyway, Jordan, she's fine. I just want to say that lastly, she does not want to be known mostly for having dated Trevor Noah. She wants to make a name for herself in real estate, right? But then they're talking about selling a condo to Michael B. Jordan, and she wants to handle it because, as you know, I'm good with celebrities.
Oh, is that what that means? Also, they're like a species? Michael B. Jordan and Trevor Noah have very little in common to me.
Well, they have one thing.
Go ahead.
Apartheid.
Okay. What? Okay. You're putting the fruit in Fruitvale Station today, bitch.
All right. That's our show.
Thank you to the glorious Marianne Jean-Baptiste for being here. I pray to God she gets an Oscar nomination for giving our favorite performance of the year.
She does not. We'll have to take those hard truths.
Right. Another hard truth. It's right in the title.
Yeah. All right. We will see you next week with more Keep It. And make sure you go and get tickets to our live show at WBUR City Space in Boston. You can get tickets on our Instagram at Keep It Show. You can go to WBUR City Space's website or iramadison.com. Don't forget to follow Crooked Media on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok.
You can also subscribe to Keep It on YouTube for access to full episodes and other exclusive content. And if you're as opinionated as we are, consider dropping us a review.
Keep It is a Crooked Media production. Our producers are Chris Lord and Kennedy Hill. Our executive producers are Ira Madison III, Louis Vertel, and Kendra James.
Our digital team is Megan Patzel, Claudia Shang, and Rachel Gajewski. This episode was recorded and mixed by Evan Sutton. Thank you to Matt DeGroat, David Tolles, Kyle Seglin, and Charlotte Landis for production support every week.
I'm Nate Silver.
I'm Galen Druk.
And I'm Claire Malone.
We're back, this time with our friends at Crooked Media for a new show called
Still Counting.
Yeah.
Numbers are hard, takes are easy.
And frankly, numbers have only gotten harder.
What does the data actually say? How do we reconcile that with the other things that we're seeing in American politics and around the world? And how do we use that data to understand or maybe even dare to predict the future of American politics?
New episodes every Wednesday starting September 9th. Subscribe to Still Counting on youtube.com/@stillcountingpodcast or wherever you get your podcasts.